Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. We watched, finally.
Well, before you say that, I think that people have to understand that we've been working pretty much nonstop for all of
quarantine. Yeah.
And so our exposure to culture is so infinitesimally small.
Yeah. We watched the Jordan documentary with the rest of the world every Sunday night.
But that's like it.
That's probably about it.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like there's really nothing that like we're not watching TV every night. I would say I'm the most boring guest at a dinner party right now, only because I have nothing to talk about. All I do is work.
I've given up, obviously, watching CNN over breakfast. Like it's just office.
Yeah.
Deleted scenes on YouTube. It's a world that is a weird world. You know, you don't know a lot of things that are going on necessarily. It's of your own making, and you talk to other humans, and that's it. But watching Beastie Boys documentary, like we did the other night,
Beastie Boys story. I mean, is the Beastie Boys documentary?
Yes,
and I say the. As a reflexive of documentary, not the Beastie Boys, because they don't like being called the Beastie Boys.
It is just Beastie Boys.
It's just Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys story.
Yeah.
Just like Beastie Boys book.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard the audiobook before. Wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was like a podcast, but it had all these different people taking you through the story that was not necessarily theirs. Will Ferrell and LL Cool J.
Chromeo. But that is a podcast.
Yeah, essentially. It's a great...
I didn't mean to pronounce it like, oh, hello.
Podcast?
A podcast.
That was a great experience by itself. This was a new experience for me. Shout out to Spike Jones. There's a lot of laughs in this, obviously. Learned some new things.
What'd you learn?
Well, I learned that the house that they stayed in when they moved to Los Angeles and started recording again as a group. This is after their New York stint. This is after decamping from Def Jam and Russell Simmons.
Well, I mean, it's after selling 10 million copies of their album, the first album.
And after a lot of success in touring the world and really becoming household names and the center of pop culture, they decamp to Los Angeles. They move into this mansion and... There is, I forget who it was owned by, but some famous couple, and there's one closet that they cannot go into, and of course, they break down the door, and they find all this vintage clothing from the 70s that is just outrageous, you know, like giant hats.
Platform shoes.
Crazy jackets.
And, suede.
Yeah, like overalls, and it just, a lot of like
A lot of looks. Yeah.
And they took all of those clothes, wore all of those clothes, and did photo shoots and music videos in those clothes. And so that was pretty fun to see.
Yeah.
You?
Well, there's a lot that I didn't know.
You had not listened to the audiobook.
But I loved...
Or audiobook?
But whatever. I loved Beastie Boys growing up.
Yes.
Like, loved them. Yeah.
Listen to the audiobook.
The podcast. But I... there was just a lot... there was, like, inner turmoil I didn't know. There were drug problems I didn't know. There were... I didn't know the Rick Rubin and Russell Simmons side of things.
Mm.
I didn't know that even as basic as they really like were headquartered a few blocks from where we were living
originally.
Yeah,
yeah. So they grew up in the city, obviously, but to be on the Upper West Side and to really start their band here is. Pretty great look for the Upper West Side.
Yeah. We're killing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the place where they first were headquartered, that's a diner now.
It is. I mean, a few stories above, but it is. That is a diner, and it's pretty wild to see. It's pretty dope that they are from up here, and I think it's a wonderful watch. Go check that out. It's on Apple TV Plus. Here's what we did. We got it, and now we're about to cancel it.
Because there's nothing else on there.
No.
Who's your favorite Beastie Boy?
Probably Yauch. I have, positive feelings for all of them, but I think from a creative standpoint, it is pretty neat to be this mysterious force and to, learn things that, really transform the path of the band.
But also of hip hop in total.
Oh, absolutely.
Like there were some things like the way that they made, Rhyming and Stealing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's pretty.
It transforms
incredible.
Everything, like it, how they started sampling shit.
Yeah,
like
it's there's a lot there. They each added something specific to the group, so yeah. I think it's very even in that sense, and I admire.
I didn't
that.
Know half of what Yauk did. Well, like, that was nuts.
Now you do.
Now I do. My favorite has always been Ad-Rock because of how funny he is.
Very funny.
And so
Mike D is also very funny too. And I do like the way that they play off each other on yeah. stage at the King's Theater in this documentary. It's a fun watch. Anybody who likes hip hop, anybody who loves hip hop, go check that out. It is on Apple TV Plus. So if you have like an Apple TV, like
we
do,
I'm making an ad.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, it's not an ad because you keep telling people to cancel.
I know. So get that free trial week.
Yeah.
And then
get a fake email. Who cares? Live it up.
Jeff, we have a really fun podcast today. Who is on it?
We have Big Waz on the podcast.
That's our guy from episode number one of the original Quarantine Radio. Mm-hmm. We go back with Waz. He's obviously, you know him from The Athletic. You know him from Count the Dings. You know him from being a media icon breaking news about the Drake project that just dropped. You've seen his name everywhere. He's back today to talk about what's gone on for the last 40 something days, but also to let us know about that connection he has up to Toronto.
I think this is his fifth appearance on our podcast.
It might be. I mean, he's well deserving of that. One of the funniest guys that we know, Big Waz.
Yes, Russ Bengston.
Yo, another one of our favorites. Russ, man, he's been on the podcast, had his own full episode of Waste Time with It's the Real. We're talking sports, we're talking politics. He has a great sense of humor. It's always fun to get on the phone with Russ, who is out there in Long Island right now.
Yeah.
And we want to see how his life has been affected by this whole thing and how he's getting by day to day.
And we have Jonathan Abrams on the podcast.
Another one of our favorites. We have not had him on the podcast just yet, so this was fun to connect with him on this platform.
But he's working on a book.
Yes.
Which we're not going to talk about right now, but right. like that's taking up a lot of his time. So that is why he has not been on the podcast.
Yes. Shout out to Jonathan Abrams. Man, New York Times bestselling author. He's covered The Wire. He's covered the Lakers. He's covered national sports. You know his work from Grantland as well. New York Times, LA Times.
Yeah, just a fantastic writer.
Fantastic guy. Yeah. We get into how he balances his family life with this book that he's writing and really where his mind's at. And we talk about Kobe a lot on this, being that he's an LA guy. Really, really fun episode. And we're going to start it off by calling out to Los Angeles.
Well, before that, I should say we're putting this episode out after we have done our AKA battle.
Yes.
And let me just say,
yep.
on our Patreon, we killed it.
Yes. Patreon.com/itsthereal is where you can go now.
Yeah.
And
I don't know, read about the highlights.
Well, you can look forward to the next fun thing that we do. It's going to be based at patreon.com/itsthereal.
Yes.
That's for all of our true supporters. Contribute $2, $3, $5, $10 a month. If you really believe in this, like we believe in this, it's something to move this whole thing forward. And we appreciate everybody who's been on board. And we appreciate everybody who sees what this is and wants to help push it along.
Yes.
So now, Jeff.
Yeah, now.
Let's call out to Los Angeles and get on the phone with our friend, Big Waz.
Hello?
What up?
Yo, what's up, guys?
What's good? How are you?
Do you just wake up?
I'm good. I can't complain.
I just feel like the energy wasn't being reciprocated, you know? Like,
oh, no, sorry. I wasn't expecting a crazy hello just now.
Yeah, well, you didn't want to respond with like a psychopathic sort of
yell
on your end with no context.
Waz, you were on our first episode of Quarantine Radio, the original Quarantine Radio.
I was.
And it's been 40-something days since then. How has your mental been across this entire period of time? And
how has your life changed?
Yeah.
You know, I hate to be that person, but like I haven't taken it quite as hard as other people because I was already working from home.
Yeah.
Also, I think a lot of people, their significant others weren't working from home, and now they are during COVID, and that's an adjustment, but that wasn't an adjustment for me at all. Like, I'm used to being annoyed every day. So I feel like I had a leg up from a lot of the people when this thing started. And, you know, I'm maintaining, you know, I'm talking to family as often as possible out on the East Coast and trying to find ways to be as, you know, just as active and as engaged with stuff as you possibly can in something like this, you know?
You said you're talking to family. Are you talking to your cousin, Renaud?
Well, yeah, I talk to him every day. I'm in two group chats with him, you know, a New York group chat. Well, actually, both are New York-based group chats. So I'm in two group chats with him. So I'm talking to him and corresponding with him every day. And then when we have our own individual things to talk about, you know, we get on the phone and stuff. So, yeah, I'm always talking to that fool.
I just felt like Nod would be, like, more of, like, a recluse. Like, he wasn't just, like, talking.
No, but he is being reclusive in the sense that, like, I talked to him today. I don't mind putting his business out there. Basically, yesterday I talked to him, and he was explaining to us that he literally hadn't left his house since the Rudy Gobert news. Like, I'm like, what about groceries and shit? He's like, no, I've been on doing Amazon. Amazon, wow. My boy.
Wow.
Was his response.
Wow.
So he's been holed up in his crib, loving it, by the way. just the idea of not having to go into the office. He has a pretty long commute from where he works, where he lives. And he's like, not doing that every day, being efficient with emails and calls and doing, you know, side stuff that he's interested in. He's been freed up to do that kind of thing. So, you know, I think he's like this quarantine thing in a very perverse way. He would admit that he wants to be outside at some point here.
But also, like, Dave hasn't left his house since this began either.
Shout out to Just Dave.
And Dave, like,
yeah,
which is nuts.
Yeah. Yes, because he's definitely a social butterfly.
Yeah, he's an open bar king.
Part of it, though, guys, is, you know, when you have the realization that there are no options, it's not like you're sitting there like, damn, I could be you could be where? Like, Korea? Where could you possibly
New Zealand?
Go?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, where are you going that you can get any of this shit done? I think there's a resignation there. A lot of people where it's just like, look, man, this is what we got. Eventually, the thing will, you know, work itself out. So I think, but Dave is straight. I talk to him on a daily basis as well.
Waz, another guy that you talk to on a regular basis is the legend David Aldridge. You guys do a podcast together. Obviously, you both work together. How does it feel when the whole world is watching on Sunday nights the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, to see your guy DA up on that screen?
Well, it's two things, right? One, every single he pops up on the screen, my girl goes, "That's David Aldridge!" I'm like, well, I know, like, first of all, like, she didn't even know David Aldridge was, so we started working together professionally because she doesn't care about the NBA like that.
Damn.
Like, so every time she does it, she's hitting me like, "Wow, that's DA again!" And I'm just like, okay. And then the second part of it is, like, because I've been doing this podcast with DA for months now, and I've gotten to know him way, way better. It's like one of the coolest things of my career thus far, for sure. I realized that he's talking in his job interview voice sometimes on TV. So I'm just like, hey, that ain't Scoop DA. You know what I'm saying? So whenever he's being really professional and using his broadcast voice, I get a little chuckle out of it because I think, and people who haven't got a chance to check our podcast out, like, if you love the NBA and you've been a fan for DA for a while, like, you know him from NBA 2K, from TNT, from ESPN. What I think is unique about our podcast is that he's using his DC nigga voice. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's getting the real DA. So that's the coolest thing I think about our dynamic is that, like, you get to hear DA in a way that you don't generally hear.
You know, if there's like a good feeling whenever David Aldridge gets on screen, what is the mood like in your apartment when Ahmad Rashad comes on screen?
Man. Ahmad Rashad. You know, like, Ahmad Rashad he's such a cultural artifact in that way. Like, you know, I'm sure you guys all remember Saturday mornings watching Inside Stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And we're of an age where we don't have a relationship with his football career. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The guy was a professional fucking NFL player.
Yeah. On the Vikings.
And, of course, you know, married Felicia Rashad and all of these things. Like,
yep.
It just harkens back to a time where, you know, stuff like House Highlights and YouTube didn't exist, where this was your main engine of NBA highlights, learning about other players, other teams, and how they were doing that season was a modern shot. So it's like, you get a cultural artifact and like a living one, you know, of a you know, NBA consumership from a bygone era.
Yeah, yeah, actually, why did Inside Stuff get canceled? Does anybody know?
Probably once NBC lost the rights to NBA, you know what I'm saying? It became, this is no more a vehicle for something, which was, of course, the legendary NBA on NBC with Mars and Costas and Hannah Storm.
And the John Tesh theme song.
Oh, yeah, you never see Marv Albert anymore. Why is that?
Well, he's going to blame with his back.
Waz, last time we checked in with you, again, this has been on the early end of things. You were still going and working out in the park. You were still getting outside a little bit. Where are you at now with that?
I work out a little bit more in the crib. Like, I've taken up mobility, stretching, not quite a yogi yet. Because I like to run outside, you know, I've started doing these mobility stretches in the crib. I even paid for $75-$80 yoga mat.
Wow.
Friendly too, guys. Yeah.
You're not, what happened to you?
Yeah, Waz, you're not just like working on the carpet. You're actually doing like real shit.
No. I invested in this thing. Right? So I've been doing that.
Wait, what's so great about a $70 yoga mat?
It's about the grip, and the materials used are, you know, is environmentally healthy. I don't know. You know,
you do sound like a real yogi.
Yeah.
I'm not right up on the street hugging shit, but I'm trying to do my part, yo. I'm trying to do my part. And so, yeah, it's about the grip and the materials used, and it's one of those things where allegedly, like, you won't have to buy another yoga mat forever once you have this thing. So, yeah, I got one of those, and I'm doing that, and I try to do cardio. I do cardio outside, and I just run on the bike path. You know what I'm saying? Like, I live in a neighborhood where it's not like, you know, Fort Greene, Brooklyn, where there's, you know, nice white people riding their bike all day, every day. This is not that type of neighborhood.
Talib Kweli is from Fort Greene. Thank you very much.
Well, up to Fort Greene and Clinton Hill and Bed-Stuy and all of those nice gentrified places and those bike lanes, man, because, you know, that's the sign of gentrification is the Starbucks. The same sign is the bike lane. Once you see a bike lane pop up on your block, you know it's that time.
That's right. Another thing, you know, it's funny. A lot of people know you for your sports stuff. A lot of people know that you're opinionated, period. But when the bat signal, or rather the owl signal, goes out,
yo,
OVO Waz is out there breaking news.
Yeah, how did that happen?
This is so crazy. I'm so happy you guys brought this up. This is actually funnier than anything, right? Like, everybody on this call right now has connections to people in the music industry, right? Yeah. On management side, on the label side, on the artist side, like literally all corners. We know people that are involved in the industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of the people, all of my friends who work in the music industry know that I'm the biggest Drake fan probably out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you legitimately told him that you love him. And he recoiled.
I scared the shit out of the guy. And as I famously told on this podcast.
That's right.
That I love the guy or whatever. So all of my friends who work in the game know that I'm a big Drake fan, right? And I had heard, I want to say last week, that he was coming out with a project within the next 2 weeks. Like, he was dropping some type of mixtape or what I described as an album-like substance within the next 2 weeks, right? And so I already had that on the back burner. And then one of my friends hit me and was like, yo, it's happening today. That was, like, I want to say around, like, 9:30, 10 a.m.
Pacific. Thursday.
Yeah, Pacific. And how I found out was, because there's a lot of artists on this thing, like Thug, Future, Fabio, Chris Brown, somebody affiliated with one of the artists that's on the project got the word, like, yo, this thing's happening today. And so what did I do? I ran to Twitter.
Yeah, like, how quick?
I ran to I ran to Twitter and I dropped the news, right? and then, of course, I got it independently confirmed from somebody else.
This is called journalism. Yeah,
wait,
right
wait,
there.
Wait, you yes, tweeted sir, it and yes, then you sir. Got confirmation?
Yeah, and then I got confirmation. Yep, yep.
Yo, do you remember in all the President's Men when there was that big sort of like hubbub about like, wait, did the person like stay on the line because they thought this was to confirm the scoop, or they stayed in the line right. because they couldn't hear all that stuff? That was this.
Yeah, luckily for us, we're talking about a mixtape and not like the democracy. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we might be able to take some liberties when it comes to the journalistic integrity of news that I'm bringing. But the best part, guys, is that it's like, this is the power of the fucking stupid blue check. Like, this shit started getting aggregated. And I'm getting people, like, this tweet just sort of takes on a life of its own. I'm getting tagged on Instagram, for, like, these music blogs and all of this shit. And, like, people are arguing in my mentions, like, who is this random fucking dude that right here?
Random.
What does he know? And then guys like, I mean, come on, he's a writer, and he's in this. He works in culture, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it was so cool, and hilarious, really, to be on the side of, like, quote unquote breaking news, well, right? And let's face it, like, Drake announced this formally like a few hours later, so it's not like I did anything significant. Like, if I would have had this a month ago, I guess, but like, it was literally like 3 hours time between I told everybody it was happening and Drake announced it on his Instagram page.
Well, I mean, like, similarly, when we broke the news that the Jay-Z and Jay Electronica thing was happening,
that was yes. fire.
All of these people, first of all, you were the first retweet, so I very much appreciate that. There were all these people who were just like fucking liars.
I know, yeah.
Like, Jay, right, I'll right. see when I believe it. I've been waiting for this for 10 years.
This
definitely
is never
not happening.
Happen. Yeah.
And so all we did was just sit there. And it's just like, all right, you know, all these people are arguing in our mentions.
Yeah, I mean, but that was the best part about it. Like, the best part was all the quote tweets that just said, cat.
Yeah.
Like, that was my favorite part, sort of the chat. I'm like, if this really happened, are you shitting me? Oh, my God, I'm going to kill you if this doesn't actually. All of those crazy comments. It was fantastic. And honestly, man, like, these people that work in social media, man, that shit is so addictive. They know exactly what they're doing. I kept logging into my Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no question. Cat. Absolutely.
Yes, I'm checking my Twitter statistics and all of that shit. I'm looking at the analytics. I'm like, look at the impressions. Oh, like, it was incredible.
How much thought did you put into what you would actually say in the tweet ahead of time?
None. It was stream of conscience. I want to say 3.5 minutes passed between send on the tweet and when I got the information where it was like, because again, the person who told me had told me last week that this thing is going to happen within the next 2 weeks from what we understand. And so he was like, it's happening today. It was not like it was the first time. So like, that was all I needed. It was like, it's happening. It's going to happen soon. It's happening today. And it's like, that tweet is incoherent. Like, I was just like, yo, everybody mount up. I don't even know what I said. I just put a bunch of owls.
Yeah. Yo, I was like, the owl has to be in Waz's like top 4 or 5 emojis used, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Waz, when the 2C slide came out, I got to be honest, I was like, eh, whatever. And in the corresponding probably like 3 or 4 days, and then since then, I've been like, yo, this shit is super fire. I swear to God. Like, I don't do the dance at home, but I listen to it pretty much on loop. Have you had the same experience?
So my experience is similar to that in the sense that, like, once he did the leak to the actual Tootsie King,
yes,
right,
yeah,
his little crew, whatever, and it was like, all right, so this is it's contrived, right? Like, this isn't some moment of artistic inspiration or whatever. He's like, I'm gonna make a song for the TikTok crowd,
yeah,
and people are like us, we come to music for something organic, something natural, something, you know, visceral,
yeah.
Like, that's what we're going to music for a lot of times, but this was the opposite of that. So I think that was working on my brain. Like, this is kind of contrived, and I'm not on TikTok. I would never record myself doing a freaking Meg Thee Stallion Savage dance. Like, so, like, I'm not, this is not for me, right? But then slowly but surely, I start listening to it. And then you're like, yeah, it's got a dance, but it's really talking about the mother shit. And like, and then you're like, all right, this melody's pretty cool. And then you start to really like the beat. And then you're like, this shit is hot. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's the genius of this guy. Like it's no matter what he does, it's constantly working on you.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're outside, right, sort of. And we actually happen to be together. And I think we talked about this when Back to Back came out.
Yep,
and we're at some party.
Yeah.
And we're hearing it with people for the first time. I'm like, oh, shit, this is actually a thing.
Yeah.
And, like, we have this realization by being out in the world and experiencing the song. With this, we're not even doing that. I'm certainly not. I'm on TikTok. The only time I listen to the song is literally by my fucking self. And, like, still, this shit is working on me somehow. Like, there's something to be said for that.
Absolutely.
Wait, have you uploaded anything to TikTok?
Hell no. I don't even have an account. I just see that shit on my Instagram and Twitter. I'm not doing it, guys. I'm 33. I'm sorry, guys. There's certain things that's just not going to happen for me.
Jeff signed up for TikTok a couple weeks ago, and I can just hear him, whether I'm in the same room or, like, rooms away, I hear him chuckling, and I know that it's something off TikTok.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Like, the lengths that people go... And every single caption is like, I worked for 6 hours on this thing. Please don't let it fail. Please don't let it fail.
Well, you gotta like the forthrightness of just being like, you know, upfront about the desperation.
Yeah, but it's almost like a meme. Like, it's not even, I don't even know how long people actually spend on this stuff. Although some of it is just like, sure, you painted yourself up to look like, you know, like Marge Simpson. And then, like, you have to do this dumb video, and then hopefully somebody watches it. I love every moment of it.
Yeah, I'm still holding out. My girl has a TikTok, and she did some shit to me the other day that really just got on my nerves.
Wait. So you are on TikTok. Wait, what was the thing that happened?
No, my girl is on this. You saw the crack back challenge or something where you dry drop in your mouth, get somebody to crack your back, and then you chew on it. And it's supposed to, I was so pissed off about this. and here's the reason. It's like, you know, when I'm not working and I'm chilling on the couch, like, I'm kind of just doing me, right? I'm doing my own thing. My girl is like all day, like, I need my back cracked. My back, I'm like, I don't know how to do this. Like, do you really need this bad? So I get up, stop what I'm doing, and then I do this whole thing, and then she starts laughing. I'm just like, this is not funny.
You got
like,
set up.
This is the thing, though, guys. It's like my girl is constantly asking me to do stuff, right? And like, I'm supposed to be like, in order not to have burnout, I'm trying to gauge what's the shit that I really need to do for this person. And the stuff that I can just be like, all right, that's not that important. So when I'm doing all of these calculations and you throw a monkey wrench or a hoax in there, that's unfair, guys. It's not right.
Yo, if you end up in some sort of like compilation of funny videos that like Jimmy Kimmel talks about on his program, that's it. You're over. It's done.
Oh man, I'm out of here. I might have to change my number. The price tag went up.
We still haven't talked about Bon Appetit.
Yo, listen. Waz loves the Bon Appetit YouTube channel just like we love it, just like David Cho loves it. Just like millions and millions of people love it. Let's go through the top three personalities on there. Waz, you go first, from favorite to second to third.
Man, this list is constantly shifting.
Yours never shifts.
Like
yours is always number one, Carla.
Well, no, Carla is because again, she's like a mom figure for me. Like she reminds me of all of my aunts that basically raised me. My mom has five sisters, and these women all raised me. Carla reminds me of all these women, so she's a mainstay in the top three.
Absolutely,
but people are constantly coming in and out of it. Like obviously, Claire Hive is crazy. I feel like he has the most rabid hive of everybody.
Yeah,
that even participates in Bon Appetit. Obviously, she's coming in and out, but I have my Brad moments.
Oh.
Like, he reminds me of all the white boys I went to high school, right? Like, he literally does, like, his accent, like, his mannerisms, all of it. He reminds me of the bros that I went to high school with. Of course, Molly, who you know, I'm not going to lie, I had these misconceptions about her. I thought yep. she was this dainty little blonde white chick.
Nah, she's but it killing turns it.
Out, like, she's married to a Jew.
Really cool. And then she wore some Air Max 97s the Woo. Other day, and I was like, God damn it.
We texted about that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, we did. She's a woman after my heart. So I have my Molly moment. Love Andy. Like, because he's like, well, not even sneakily. He's like a really snarky, catty dude. And it's kind of hilarious. Like, it's really hilarious. Not like snarky. So, like, I always enjoy Andy. I mean, I have my Chris moments. Not going to front. Rick.
Yeah, Rick is the worst.
Nah, I could do without Rick right now.
I could do without Rick.
To kind of miss me. The
Alex Delaney
the
out.
Andy and Shorty, not Sola.
Oh, I fuck with Sola. I like Christina okay.
I like Sola. I'm not really crazy about the slim Indian shorty.
Yeah, oh,
Delaney.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's a sneaky one that Waz really, really, really likes. Gabby.
I like Gabby. Makes me laugh every time she's on screen, though. Like, her comedy is what I'm there for. I'm not going to say I've actually tried any of the shit she's actually
No, of course. No,
video,
no, no, no.
Personality-wise, I rock with her. But yeah, Delaney, the homie that lives in upstate New York that has a funny pronounced name.
Yeah.
Not for me.
No.
Not for me.
Oh, Emil.
I'm going to say...
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to say my top three right now. Mm-hmm. I love Brad. I think that, you know, the pickling, I think that, like... Also, by the way, getting a glance at what they're like at home mm-hmm. with their families, yeah. I fucking love that. Right. I think it's great. Yeah. So, Brad, the way that he mixes up with his kids, his wife, what he hears in the background, also, like, his interaction with the team on the other side of the computer, great. Yep. Love Brad. I love Carla. I like seeing her home, too. She got kids who are sort of, like, teenagers, right? So they're a little, like...
Yep. They're a little off it.
Yeah, one's a little camera shy. The other's, like, right up in there. I love that. I'm with Carla. And I love Claire, but I'm not super into Claire at home. I'm going to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah, she's not in her element at the crib at all. You're
no.
Right.
No, because she can't make all these complicated like candies.
I am fucking with Molly like all the way. So that's my top three right now. Brad, Carla, Molly. Jeff?
Ooh. I mean, Brad's making great content at home.
Top three right now too, guys. Yep.
Yeah,
I think, I mean, but that's, you know, I don't want to judge people off what they're doing at home. I also think that Chris is great.
I do like Chris. Chris has grown on me. You know what? I initially was a little skeptical. He's like the guy with the magic nose, right? He can like...
But that's what's crazy. Like,
I think it's
his
pretty
skill
great.
Level, everybody admires.
Yeah.
And so that's why I fuck with Chris. But yeah, I would say Brad, Chris, and I still fuck with Claire, you know?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. She's a legend.
Yeah. She lives near us. We go to the same Whole Foods.
That's pretty great, too.
But we haven't stopped by.
Wait, she lives in you guys' neighborhood?
Yeah, Upper West Side.
But we,
we talked about that.
I'm not enough of a psychopath to, like, go find her. I just know that
she
lives, like, near our Whole Foods.
Waz, do you have any celebrities that live in your neighborhood right now?
Yes, just one, and you guys are going to absolutely love this. Queens' own Fredro Starr.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. He's literally up the block.
Do you walk around playing Onyx just hoping that he's gonna like find his way outside the house and be like, yo,
no,
Shadyville?
Because Fredro Starr has this like, you know, the two type of black strangers that you meet on the streets or in public. There's the head nod black stranger and the looks at you really suspiciously black stranger.
Yeah.
And he's not in the head nod black category, so I would never actually acknowledge it. And
by the way,
plus,
you know
like,
who
I'm at the age where he knows I know who the fuck he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he knows for a fact that I'm not young enough to not know who he is.
Yo,
by the way, you know who like you know what nailed that sort of dynamic of like the head nod versus like the eye roll? The Office.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley was always like very skeptical of any other black guy that came in the office.
That's right.
Yes. Well, exactly. And he drives a white BMW 7 Series, so he has a nice car, not like a Rolls Royce or anything, but a nice car. Like,
nothing to laugh at.
Are we talking about Fredo or are we talking about Stanley?
Nothing to sneeze at. Nothing to sneeze at. But yeah, I've seen him at Ralph's, which is our grocery store over here.
Yeah.
I've seen him parked right on the corner of where his block is or whatever, because like there's a bunch of townhouses right where I stay at. And I've seen him over there. But yeah, Frazier Starr, I've seen in the neighborhood just walking around, me walking around, him and his white BMW.
Yeah, now's not the time when you can like go over and dap someone up, obviously, but from 6 feet apart, I would love Waz either, you know, for you to give the head nod.
Yeah, or start rapping the second verse of, of Slam.
Next time I see him, I will try to do the acknowledgement thing if it's not too awkward, but I ask Jeff though, if you were to see Claire in Whole Foods, would you run up on her and be like, "Hey, what's up? I'm a big fan, and I'm in the content business too." Or would you?
It was part of me where I was like trying to hear you out, and then like as soon as you were like, "I'm in the content business," I was like, "Ugh!" Like, ugh. Hey, like I have a podcast, and like you know, it'd be great if you like called in. No, like there's so much embarrassing about any of that. I am totally off that. No, I think that like. If you are around somebody in like a setting that makes sense, not like me approaching people at a grocery store when they're just trying to like pick up like shallots
right from behind a mask. Yeah.
Doesn't work.
Well, listen, Waz.
Well, actually, Waz came up to us and he was just like, "Yo, follow me." I guess you know, Waz isn't the best judge of how to approach people.
In the streets, though, it's tough, especially like just in a neighborhood like mine. It's like it's not one of those "oh hey neighbor" type of thing. It's really totally not a vibe here. So like even then, I would feel you know. And again, like with you guys, we had mutual acquaintances.
Yeah, we
so,
did.
Yeah.
You know, I could go in and be like. Drop 20 different names on you, motherfucker.
No, but instead you just said, follow me.
Waz, we love you. Take care of yourself. We'll be checking in soon, all right?
Love you guys. Thanks for having me on. Keep going strong. I really, truly admire what you guys are doing with the content shit. Because, like, the dedication it takes to be hounding people, getting people on the phone, like, yo, talk to me for 30, 40 minutes, like, and getting prominent people who are engaging and making like dope content for your fans and shit. Like, I don't like the average person has no idea what it takes to get some of these people on the freaking phone. Dude. Man, like,
yeah, we keep running up to them and just saying, "I'm in the content business."
Hey, listen, man, you gotta get them where you fit in, Jeff.
Waz, you're the greatest. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, man. Later, fellas.
And now, Jeff, let's get on the phone with our friend in Long Island. Russ Bengtson.
Yeah, hello.
Russ!
What up?
What's going on, guys?
What's happening? How are you?
Not bad.
All things considered, you're getting through day by day, moment by moment?
That's fairly accurate. I mean, look, April...
Why
April
does it feel like
somehow?
Russ is like looking around, like real suspicious?
Yeah. Everything is fine. Yeah.
No, it's funny. A lot of people said it, and it's true. Like March felt like it lasted about 12 years, and April felt like it lasted about 12 seconds.
Yeah.
Russ, if we can go real quick, who at this point in April, who is the most hated person in the whole Trump administration right now?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's still got to be Trump himself, right?
Like, he always wins.
Come on.
He's
like,
number one.
I don't even know if anyone's... I'm not even sure if anyone's close.
Jared is getting up there for me. I hate him so fucking much.
Yeah. Shadow president.
That's
Jared
right.
Kushner. I mean, yeah. And I also feel... I don't know. I mean, I love the fact that we're going to... apparently, everyone wants to talk about her scarves, but... I feel a little betrayed by Deborah Birx.
Oh my God!
Who seems
yeah,
to have chosen Trump over science. So she's not really high on my list right now either.
I sort of forgot that a bunch of people were even in the administration anymore.
Yo, here's one. Here's one for you. Mm-hmm. Remember Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah.
Is he stuck in the Ukraine?
Like, I think he is.
Quarantined there, or
he's with
a Fox News studio.
Exactly, he's with the documentary team. They're digging up great information right now on the Biden kid. You know,
I think they figured it out.
Russ, are you able to escape the news cycle? Do you get out? Do you sort of like turn everything off and go into a corner and close your eyes or something? How does this work?
I try to, but man, I'll tell you, it's been hard. Like, honestly, the only thing keeping me like out of the news cycle for Gaps is The Last Dance.
Yeah. Like, oh, so wait, that, once like, a week?
Yeah, well, actually, me and my friend Alex, we're doing a podcast for it.
Yes.
So we're watching it like literally 3 times a week. So, I mean, you figure 2 episodes, 2 hours, 3 times a week. So that's 6 hours.
That's
I mean,
pretty
that's
good.
Not bad.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of escape time.
Who is your favorite member of the Bulls that like doesn't get enough credit?
Probably Craig Hodges.
Yeah.
I don't even know who that is. Who is that?
I don't think they talked about him at all yet. And it's like, you know, he was kind of one of the key pieces of that first three-peat team. So I don't know. It's been interesting because like, you know that Jordan obviously has a lot of creative control over this whole thing. So it's like, who's he mentioning? Who is getting mentioned and who's not getting mentioned? Like,
yeah, I saw that Ken Burns was not into the documentary.
Really?
Yeah, Ken Burns was like, this is not journalism. The Jordan people are involved.
Oh, whatever. Calm down, Ken
My
Burns.
My thing was like, yo, like, Ken, like, you did documentaries on like 1800s baseball and the Civil War. Like a lot of those people were dead by then. So
yeah, Lincoln wasn't involved.
I'm thinking his documentaries might have been a little different if like Robert E. Lee was still alive.
Yeah,
saying like, don't talk to this guy.
Is there a moment that you love more than any other? And is it so far in the documentary? And is it Horace Grant calling the Detroit Pistons bitches?
No, I mean, that was definitely incredible and probably my favorite moment of, like, current day stuff. Also, just seeing Horace Grant pop up on screen and being like, whoa, that's Horace Grant now. Because I feel like we haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah.
But honestly, and, like, I've loved, like, all the season montages set to, you know, they did what? It was, like, Eric B. and Rakim in the first one and then LL. And, you know, I hope someone more enterprising and more computer savvy than me cuts those all into like one extended highlight reel. Cause that would be an amazing, like, I don't know when it's all done, you know, 10, 12 minutes of straight Jordan highlights set to hip hop. Like,
isn't it weird that like Jordan did not like hip hop?
I think, I mean, he was famously an Anita Baker fan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like, didn't know
I don't
who Rakim
know what
was.
Else he got into.
Yeah, I think that it's nice for all of us who love both things to enjoy that.
Yeah.
It's also been really cool to watch Jordan in HD, which is sort of a first. So you've watched live every Sunday night, and then you watch it 2 times again throughout the week. Have you found anything in those second and third viewings that really like opened your eyes?
Well, actually, the way it works is because we got screeners, so we're recording the pods like before it airs. So I'll watch the episodes twice before they air, and then the actual airing ends up being the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna probably watch the entire run again once it's all out, and just watch it all like straight through. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if anything really pops up that I wouldn't have noticed. You know, it's just like right now I feel like they sold us on this is going to be this behind the scenes look at the 97-98 series, and instead we're getting kind of an entire Jordan biography. You know, 80% of it, it seems like, is doing backstory, which is fine, but it's not really what I expected going in. I have greatly enjoyed like the Dennis Rodman college highlights, Scottie Pippen college highlights. Like,
absolutely.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember having seen a lot of that stuff. Jordan, like, I feel like, I don't know, that's just been mined so much. There's not a lot that's like brand new.
Is the portrayal of Phil Jackson so far more or less what you expected? And did you understand that maybe he was a bit of a backstabber in taking Doug Collins' job?
I mean, look, that's the weird thing about it is, like, with Phil, I don't know how he could be surprised by Jerry Krause like maneuvering to get rid of him when the entire way he got the job was Jerry Krause maneuvering to get rid of somebody else. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, once
like,
a cheater, always a cheater, you know? Ladies.
But it's like, I don't know, Phil was always like kind of an open book anyway. I mean, he obviously wrote books about a lot of these seasons. So yeah. There was one point, I forget what he was talking about, but you know, the stuff was almost like verbatim that he wrote about in Sacred Hoops anyway. So it's like, there's not a lot you're going to get from Phil that's brand new. The thing I think is weird a little bit is when he went into a lot of that Native American stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like back when he was actually coaching, we heard that and it was like, ooh, mystical. Like, he's taking all these things from culture and turning them into basketball. And now you hear it and it's like, ew, it's a little cringeworthy in spots. Like,
yeah. Shout out to Jeff Van Gundy who coined Big Chief Triangle, you know?
Yes. Yes. This documentary could definitely use some Jeff Van Gundy.
Russ, have you been reading anything? Have you been able to sort of escape in that way?
A little bit. I mean, I'm working on this book still and having trouble sometimes focusing on like actually sitting and getting work done instead of, you know, just refreshing the horror machine that is Twitter.
Yeah.
And finding out what's happening.
So is it like when musicians are making a new album, they don't want to listen to other music on the radio for fear that it would like sort of get in their head and affect it in some way?
You know, I think I've kind of been the opposite of that and probably have that exact problem. You know, I'm trying to reread a lot of older basketball stuff just to, you know, not only see what I can find in there that maybe, you know, gets lost, but also, find out what has been written before. I reread, like, Spike Lee's book, that Best Seat in the House. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I reread Breaks of the Game because I feel like anyone about basketball needs to read that. And then just like such random like biographies and autobiographies, outrageous. Charles Barkley's first autobiography, which I don't remember if that's the one he claimed to have been misquoted in or if it was a later one. Or one of my favorites is Wilt Chamberlain's, which the subtitle is Just Like Any Other 7 Foot Black Millionaire Who Lives Next Door. It came out in like the early 70s and you know, same thing. It's just a interesting perspective, getting Wilt's perspective on himself.
Do you ever see the chatter on Twitter where people are like, well, did Wilt's 100-point game really happen because it wasn't actually like filmed or the film has disappeared or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have seen a little bit of that. That seems like it's probably the same people who question whether the moon landing actually happened.
Yeah, or how this virus exactly, you know, developed in the first place. Those same people.
Maybe people were just asking the right questions, okay? And none of these questions have been answered by the mainstream media.
The Will thing is weird because, like, that season he averaged 50 points a game and he scored 70 a couple times, so... You know, I don't think it's that much of a stretch.
Where's the proof?
You know, unless you're going so far to question whether Wilt actually ever existed, which well, would be really
now we're talking.
Yeah, okay,
here we go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's
really
dig.
Like, if you're gonna go conspiracy theory, go all the way.
I've never seen him.
Russ, you are staying out in the suburbs. What is it like on a daily basis where you are right now?
Yeah, how's the line to Trader Joe's?
Actually, I haven't been to Trader's in a minute. I went to the
Trader's?
Last grocery shop.
Wait, how are you on like first name basis with Trader Joe's? I guess the more horrifying thing would be if you just called it Joe's.
Joe, yeah, me and Joe, we go back. You know, like, it's not too bad. You see a lot of people out walking or out riding bikes or whatever, and like, you definitely have the moments where you're like, wait a minute, is that an actual nuclear family or are they actually like getting together? There are a lot of those drive-by birthday celebrations.
Oh my God.
Oh, so a lot of like honking and...
Yeah. My mom actually just went to take part in one right now for someone who's turning 90.
Wow.
This is my mom's first time driving anywhere since this started. So since like the middle of March.
Wow.
She's barely left the house. I'm kind of the personal shopper.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
Do you find that people are living their lives according to social distancing rules right now?
I think they're following it for the most part. You know, you still see people like in the supermarket who maybe aren't taking quite as much care as they should, or like obviously people going into like 7-Eleven, which is a strange thing. I feel like people going to the supermarket have the feeling that like, okay, I'm doing something. I should wear a mask and wear gloves and whatever else. And I feel like they still think when they go to 7-Eleven, it's like, oh, I'm just jumping out of the car to get something.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about it. So yeah, I mean, that stuff is still a bit concerning sometimes. The funny thing with the drive-by birthdays, there was one, the neighbors across the street, and I won't snitch them out too bad because I don't know their names anyway.
No, just tell us their address.
Yeah. I'll take a photo later. But they set something up for like their daughter who is six or something like that, and like all these cars drive by, which is fine. But then, like, a bunch of them park in front of the house, and they get out, and they're talking, and they're kind of sort of maintaining distance, but not so much. And it's like, you guys are defeating the entire purpose of the drive-by birthday.
Nuts. Do you fear what it's going to be like as the weather gets warmer, like it sort of is today?
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, we've driven out. The one place my mom did go, I've driven her out to the beach a couple times, because it's not super far. And the second time we went, there was a huge line of cars waiting to get in. And then there's people like with chairs set up in the parking lot of the beach and people on the beach. And it's like, you know, you see the shots and stuff from California and from Florida.
Yeah.
Where it's gotten completely crazy. And I'm like, you know what? Like, the only reason they're not doing that here is because it's not warm enough yet. I mean, this was like literally the first sunny sort of nice spring day, and people were already flocking to the beach. So, you know, I think that's going to happen. That's the problem to me with things opening is, like, you can't trust people to do the right thing. The people who are going to go to the beach or to the mall first are the same ones who probably aren't terribly worried about, like, masking up or whatever else. So, you know, it's funny, like, I'll drive past the mall here and think, like, I can't imagine going to this place for another couple of years yet.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly.
My favorite conspiracy theory is that the virus can't exist outside of like 80 degree weather or whatever.
Oh my God.
And it's like, but your body is warmer than 80 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, spoken by people who've never gotten a cold during the summer.
Do you?
You know, like, come on, guys.
Well, no, that's global warming.
Ah, yes.
Russ, what do you think of the protests that are happening at, you know, various state capitals?
Yeah, how many have you participated in? What does your sign say?
No, people are insane. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know if they feel like just these rules are being arbitrarily set to keep them from going outside. You know, I guess it's hard to notice when 60,000 people have died of something. Like, you'd think at some point you take it seriously. I don't know if it has to hit 100,000 to a million people have to die before you're like, oh yeah, they're actually doing this for my own good.
It's so troubling. And then,
well, the worst part is that the Trump administration just keeps saying how good of a job they're doing, and they keep putting the goalposts further back. So now,
right,
like 60,000 people have died so far, and then it's like, oh no, but we want to keep under 100,000.
Yeah, it could have been a million. Could have been 2.2 million.
Right,
yeah.
It would have been 2 million if we did nothing. So anything better than that is good. Which is, I mean, from a purely academic, you know, theoretical standpoint, I kind of almost admire that, where it's like, wow, you're really setting the baseline at, if I did nothing, this would have happened, so anything is better than that.
Sure, oh, you get it. So. Yeah. Like, cosmically, you know, 60,000 people is not as big as 2 million, sure.
You know, it's like if you turn in a paper that's really terrible and you get a bad grade on it, say to the professor, like, well, it would have been a lot worse if I didn't do it at all, so I don't see why this is bad.
It would have been a lot worse if Wilt Chamberlain never existed, you know?
exactly. So that stuff is kind of crazy. I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely keeping the trips outside to a minimum, and grocery store, like, you know, fill a cart every time I go instead of, and I was one of those people who like would wake up and be like, oh, what do I want to eat today? And let's just go shopping for that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Now in our apartment, like we've gone to like a whiteboard and we actually have like the days listed out and the different meals. And it's like, who are we even?
Yeah. We've become like incredibly regimented in a way where we never were at all. Like we would, every single day was different. And now it's like, oh no, every day is the same. There's a structure to my life that I've never had.
And the weirdest part of this structure is that we go food shopping at midnight. And that's not even any exaggeration. We go to our 24-hour grocery store when there's no people there.
I was going to say, is it less crowded, or did a lot of people also have that idea so it ends up being more crowded?
No.
No, like, and nobody's in fact, we are very smart. We're like third eye open smart.
Yesterday, we ran out of paper towels, and boy, did we need some just to clean up stuff. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'll mask up. I'll be safe, and I'll go out during the day. And I went a couple blocks, and there were so many people just moving around. I was like, I can't even like try this.
In New York City.
I know.
Russ, and in New York City, there were all these people here.
And like, then
you never would expect it. Not here.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, you go at off hours, and it's totally fine. And lots of paper towels right there, by the way. So
yeah.
Very nice. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I usually take a walk every day, and it's like, you know, the Ace Hardware parking lot seems to be full every single day. And I'm just like, I have no idea what people are going there for.
Oh, I know exactly what they're going there for. I joined TikTok like 2 weeks ago. Everybody's doing home projects.
Really?
Yeah. People love fucking home projects.
I guess that's not a surprise.
Yeah. Like,
I'm surprised that they would put it on TikTok. I thought it was just for dances.
Yeah. TikTok is the most fascinating but also least fascinating place I've ever experienced anything. Like, it's just like the dumbest shit, and you end up watching for like 6 hours straight.
Well, you know, besides The Last Dance, I suppose you can watch these, you know,
TikToks
for
TikTok dances
a minute at a time.
Yeah,
you know, Russ,
for 6 hours.
That's exactly right. Russ, we love you. Take care of you and yours. Safe out there.
Russ, before you go, how is your beard?
It's all right. I actually trimmed it at one point because I was like, I don't want to let it get to, like, you know, the
Unabomber,
the Tom Hanks in the first second half of Castaway.
Yeah. Can I suggest that you do grow it out?
I mean, you know, from this point I can, I suppose, for a while. We'll see where it goes. But, you know, hopefully some things go back to quasi-normal at some point. Although, same thing. Like, I don't see myself sitting down in a barber's chair for a while yet.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Well,
listen, Russ, we appreciate you. We look forward to a whole bunch of things out of this this quarantine, including your book, including what your beard looks like, and definitely including whatever Rudy Giuliani is digging up in this time of silence. Russ, take care of yourself.
I hope I didn't do anything in the Ukraine that I forgot about.
And we'll be checking in, all right?
Yeah, you guys be safe too, and you know, keep up the midnight shopping trips if that's what's working.
That is absolutely working.
You know, say hi to New York for me.
And now, Jeff, let's call down to North Carolina and get on the phone with our friend, Jonathan Abrams.
Yo, what's up, man?
Jonathan!
What up?
How are you? Doing?
Good.
Jonathan, I've always been interested in this. When you heard, starting back in like 2016, Donald Trump start to call real news and real journalists fake news, and have that continue for the next 4 years, how did you take that, having been a real journalist, worked for, you know, totemic papers, and know that this work is actually for real?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? I think there's always going to be people out there who are going to want to believe what they want to believe, and they're going to tend to follow the news that's going to tip to what they believe in. So if you're a conservative and you have a conservative president, you're going to tend to be following what he says instead of listening to more democratic or more, I would say, real news.
Yeah.
Instead of news. Like, I, you know, like like Michael Schmidt, who just won a Pulitzer, yes. I think two Pulitzers last year for his work at the New York Times. He was in sports when I was at the New York Times, mm-hmm. and he was busting a lot of the steroid stories in baseball at the time. And, you know, he's a close friend, and, you know, like the depths that he goes to try and do the work that he does. And a lot of times people are putting themselves at risk just to be able to report these deeply journalistic stories. So, I mean, it's tough.
Yeah. How are you doing these days creatively? Because we know that you're working on a book. You have been working on a book before this pandemic. Now it's here, and it's a totally different mindset, I would think.
Well, also, I mean, like, because of everything happening outside, you also have your kids inside. And so, like, what is your work parenting balance right now?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been difficult. It's been challenging. I'm very good at Legos now. I hated Legos when I was a kid, but my 6-year-old is so deeply into them. So there'll be times when I'm just like, oh man, I got to get ready for this interview over the phone. My son will want to do Legos. 5 hours later, you know, we have this amazing Lego robot done, but I'm way behind with work. And then my wife also works full time, so we're, you know, a lot of times it's trying to figure out just how to get through that day, and then once everybody's asleep, I'm able to actually get some work done. But it's been fun. Like I told my wife, like, you know, just being with our sons, we have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, and seeing, you know, real developmental steps firsthand instead of, you know, them being at daycare or school, it's been tough. And it's been nice, and it's something that we're trying to appreciate.
Yeah. Do you think that they have, or at least the 6-year-old has a sense of what's going on in the greater world?
A little bit. Like he knows he can't, you know, go to the playground right now or go see his friends, and you know, he's in kindergarten, so he doesn't have that deep of relationships with people yet. I think it would be more difficult if he was a little bit older and more, I guess, had better bonds. We live next door to a girl who's a high school senior, and you know, I see her walking around the neighborhood, and I feel bad for her.
Her
shoulders are kind of slumped, and she's missing out on all that good stuff that people typically look forward to at this point in their lives.
And especially this time of year, too, when you're getting into, like, the end of senior year, your prom, looking forward to, like, traditional, like, you know, college shopping, you know, going to college, starting your freshman year. That is a really tough time.
Yeah. Is your son ready to go to any of the state houses to go protest? Like what is he?
If he could protest opening Chuck E. Cheese, I'm sure he would.
How have you chosen to escape, as it were, like within your own house? Is there a place that you go to? Is there a book that you can dive into, a movie that you can watch? How do you spend your time away from the bigger picture?
I mean, I'm big on mental health. So I, you know, before all this, I meditated daily. I do yoga. That I find that stuff really helps. Reading wise, I just finished Iceberg Slim's first book.
Yeah.
I finally got to read that, and I'm glad I did. That guy is such an amazing writer.
Yeah.
And that was a fun book to kind of disappear into.
Can I ask you how you do yoga?
Yeah, I do. Look, I'm mid-30s, and I play basketball 3 times a week before the pandemic, and I want to try to keep it going as long as I can. That's something I miss a lot, is being able to get out there and play basketball.
Yeah.
And so when I do get back out there, man, I want to
You want to be limber and not, like, you know, tear anything. Yeah. But, like, where are you?
Blew out my knee first time.
You blew out your knee?
No, I don't want to blow
out my knee first time. Like, that would be great. Where are you, like, coaching yourself through yoga? Like, are you watching YouTube? Are you?
Yeah, there's, like, a YouTube series that I do, or there's a P90X yoga video that's real good.
Yeah, we've fallen in line with a woman named Adrian from Austin, Texas, who seems to be very popular on YouTube.
Yo, I've been doing Adrian for years.
She's great.
I'm doing the true 30 day with her right now.
Same, yeah. And she is. Yeah.
It's us, it's you, and it's John Caramanica. And there's like a bunch of us out there. Matt Migliarelli, like, yeah, there's a bunch.
A lot of people, well, clearly like millions of people. But yeah. Adrian is. you know, she brings just enough corniness to our mornings to start it off
corny.
To start it off right.
Yo, I thought that was my secret.
Yeah, you're like P90X, I don't know, you know, some like real like, you know, manly stuff, and it's like, no, we're all seeing Adrian.
Obviously, everybody's been, you know, sitting down and gathering around the television every Sunday night, watching the Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary. Have you found anything out about Jordan, about those Bulls teams that you did not know beforehand?
I don't know if I found anything out. Just, you know, growing up and having those Jordan teams be such a big moment in any basketball fan's life. But mine especially, I used to live in California, and you always saw the Bulls on WGN because that was one of the few stations that
was nationwide. Yeah,
That was nationwide when we were younger. I think it just reinforces everything, right? You knew that Jordan was a taskmaster. You knew that he was hard to get along with, and if you were a teammate, you were going to hate him, but you were going to appreciate that he tried to get you up to his level. So just being able to see new film and see that footage in real time of those seasons and what he was going through, I mean, it's just like a injection of nostalgia, right?
Well, yeah, and and that's been very interesting around here too. Obviously those Jordan years, that time brings a lot of memories back for us. We, before the quarantine started, bought a Nintendo, which was preloaded. It's a Nintendo that has like an HDMI plug now, but it's preloaded with 30 games. And Jeff and I have been playing Super Mario 3 because that's very nostalgic for us. Have you been going back and
also because it's the only video game that we can like do well at?
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah. So,
but have you been like listening to music from, you know, years past? Have you been you know, finding things, pictures, or memories that can bring you back to a place of comfort?
It is weird, right? Because I think at this time we're all trying to get back to something that we're more familiar with and comfortable with. And I'll be honest, during a lot of walks around the neighborhood, I found myself listening to Pac, listening to West Side Connection, listening to DJ Quick, some of the West Coast stuff that I grew up with. And you're exactly right. It takes you back to a moment in time where it felt like, you know, everything was normal.
Yeah. What was the first concert you went to?
Oh, man, the first concert I went to, I want to say Montel Jordan.
Yeah.
That is so dope. Do you know what you were wearing?
Oh, man. I probably wouldn't tell you even if I could.
Like, you were probably like, what, like 15 or something, and you were like wearing like grown and sexy stuff.
Hard bottoms.
Yeah, hard bottoms.
Exactly. But yeah, I think it was, this is how we do it.
Yeah. Jonathan, this has been a particularly tough year for West Coasters with the passing of Kobe. Have you been removed enough to sort of like put everything in perspective and consider what his whole career and life has meant to, especially people who have that Los Angeles connection?
Yeah, honestly, you know, it still doesn't hit. It still hasn't really hit, and I don't know when it has or when it will. My friend a couple days ago sent me a YouTube footage that I didn't even know was out there of me asking Kobe a question at one of the finals that I don't think I'd ever seen it. And, you know, it just brought all that back again. There's like moments where you're gonna like always remember when stuff happened, and learning about Kobe's death was just like, I was taking my son to get his hair cut, and I just started to see the reports flash, and I'll never forget how I felt at that moment, because, you know, right after my son's haircut was over, I took him home, and for me it honestly, it felt like when Pac passed.
Yeah.
Because I'll never forget, you know, where I was in that moment. And I was just, you know, 11 or 12 when that happened. And, you know, those things, they take a long time to settle in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in a lot of like hip hop beefs, people would take sides. I know that Jeff and I, for no reason other than we were huge Jay-Z fans, stopped listening to Nas when they were beefing, right? Did you happen to take a side when Kobe and Shaq did first have that sort of like, who's, you know, a bigger presence here and who should get the ball more and who should be, you know, the man ultimately? Did you choose one over the other in terms of Shaq versus Kobe?
I don't think I did at the time, just because even though they were bickering, they always seemed to figure it out when it mattered most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bickered all through those three championships that they won together. But when it was crunch time, they always came through. And when Shaq got traded to Miami, you kind of knew it was almost the end of the line for Shaq as far as his domination goes, because Kobe was, you know, a maniac about being in shape every season. And
Shaq was not.
Like every year, every year Shaq would come in a little bit heavier, need a little bit of a more surgery or operation that he would put off. And, you know, Kobe, you knew that he didn't have to turn on a switch to be at his best, but Shaq, you knew that, and you knew that one time that switch just wasn't going to come on.
Watching the Jordan documentary now, you know, do you see the same killer instinct in Jordan as Kobe?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think especially Jordan talking at Kobe's memorial kind of emphasized it more. You know, during Kobe's career, he didn't really touch on how much of an impact that Michael Jordan had on him. I think it's only coming to light now that Kobe was really chasing Michael, and he wanted those six championships. He wanted more than Michael. And you see the games are just completely patterned after one another. I think Michael Jordan had an interview like a couple of weeks ago where I think he said that only – like, of the players he'd want to play one-on-one, it would be, like, Elgin Baylor and Jerry West and other old guys. Then he was like, Kobe would probably be the only person I would worry about because he'd stole all my moves.
Yeah, I saw that. I was just like, that's the highest compliment.
You know, a lot of people now are binging through series new and old. Obviously, you have already watched The Wire. You have, you know, written quite a lot about that. Is there anything that you have not watched that is sort of like missing from your canon?
Not watched missing from my canon. I feel like I've seen all the like prestigious TV shows. We just finished the third season of Ozark.
Yeah.
That show, the same casting director that The Wire had, is the same one for Ozark, and she's really, really talented at putting people like who just seem like they always existed in that world. Her name's Alexa Fogel. She also did Atlanta with Donald Glover.
Wow.
So that's a big one that we just completed. I don't know if I have any prestige ones that are still on my list. I feel like I'm trying to check them all off.
By the way, the Jason Bateman casting, like, originally, like, is a super weird one, right? Because, like, he had mostly done all comedic stuff before. He'd never really gone dark.
Right. He certainly, you know, at that point had been on a really, you know, hot streak in terms of being, like, that guy who could be really dry and really funny. And,
yeah,
this is clearly a departure. And now it's like people only know him for this.
Yeah. Like, I wonder what she saw.
Yeah. Well, I think he may have come attached to the show beforehand. Like, I think that's the case with, like, big shows, is that if they get, like, a big star, then she, like, fills in the rest. So she, like, does, like, you know, Julia Garner for Ruth Langmore and those type of slots.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I still look at that show and I see, like, Arrested Development, you know, in it at some points.
Jonathan, as someone who has, you know, spoken to so many people across the sports and entertainment worlds, do you find, like us, the little kid inside of you, getting such a kick out of the fact that you're actually speaking on a human-to-human level with people that you grew up idolizing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the kick, as much as you want to be objective, and be able to look at people just as people, which is what I try to do a lot. There's obviously sometimes when you're like, man, like, I grew up listening to you my whole life, or I grew up watching you play, and you know, that stuff is always going to be there. But, you know, I think most of the time I just try to still always have that human to human connection and try to treat people like people.
I mean, you know, as somebody who you've spoken to a lot of people, and we always get asked this, like, which is a very basic question, like, what's your favorite interview? But I want to know, like, of anybody that you've interviewed, who's somebody that you would be like, I want to speak to them more?
Ed Burns, who was the co-creator of The Wire with David Simon, is just one of the smartest people that I've ever talked with. And a lot of The Wire was based off of his life. Like, he was the real police detective in real life. He was the guy who left the police department to go teach in a Baltimore middle school, and he just like his whole conversation was just like an education on life. And I feel like if I could pick his brain a little bit more, I'd be able to solve the conundrum of life. He's like one of those speakers.
Did you get a kick out of this like we did in watching like the Jordan documentary? The filmmakers present an iPad to Jordan, you know, for him to watch clips, and then like an iPhone to like Dennis Rodman, and they can and Scottie Pippen too, and they can watch these clips and get a reaction from that. That's something that, like, you know, when we've spoken to people, had conversations with people, clearly we have not done, but I think it's such an interesting interview tactic.
I thought that was genius, and I got mad because he kind of stole my bit
a little bit. Oh no!
the way that I do oral histories, and the way that you make it seem like it flows, and that it's like just a conversation among people, is, you know, once you get some going, you can read somebody's quote to somebody else and say, well, what do you think about that? Instead of you presenting this same question that they probably heard a million times, it can be more organic. And I think that that's what they got in that documentary, is that they didn't just ask Michael Jordan, hey, you walked off the court, you didn't shake hands with Isaiah Thomas, what was that all about? They actually showed what Isaiah Thomas thinks about it now to MJ, and allowed basically MJ to like laugh in Isaiah's face as he was holding the iPad, which is more organic.
Actually, what is your favorite 30 for 30 episode?
Probably the Fab Five.
Oh man, yeah, same director as this.
Yeah, Jason same Hare. Director.
Yeah.
It's pretty special, and I think that obviously this comes during a time when we never expected to be in this situation, but I think what ESPN and Netflix have done in bringing this to a place where people can gather around and get some excitement on a regular basis, week in and week out, I think it's just been like something we can take joy in, you know?
Yeah, for once. By the way, Jonathan, I do want to apologize for misaging you when you went to the Montel Jordan concert. I didn't realize that you and I were like the same age.
Yeah.
And that you're not like, you know.
What you should have done instead, Jeff, is show Jonathan a video clip on your iPad.
Yeah.
To sort of like get him back in the moment. Listen, Jonathan, we love you. Take care of yourself, you and yours down there. Stay working on the same schedule as you can, both on your book and on Legos. We'll be checking in, you know that. And until then, be well, all right?
All right, appreciate you guys. Stay safe.
Shout out to Jonathan Abrams. Shout out to Russ Bankston. And shout out to the one and only Big Waz. Jeff, are we back tomorrow?
We are back every day forever.
As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Right.